on page 111, chapter 7. The respected supreme divinity said, "Listen, O son of she who excels, Arjuna, as to how you will know me completely beyond a doubt by taking refuge in me through the practice of union with your mind centered on me. I shall teach you that unending knowledge and wisdom which, when understood, nothing more remains to be understood. Among thousands of men, few strive for perfection, and even among those who strive, few know my reality. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intellect, and ego are the eight divisions of my nature." Remember, we talked about in Shankya philosophy, the first 24. We had the five organs of action and the five organs of knowledge and the five tanmatras, the objects of inner perception. And now, starting from the 16th, earth, water, fire, air, ether, the five elements, and mon, buddhi, and ahamkar. He left out chitta here. "This is my lower nature, but different from it, know my higher existence of life, by which the perceivable universe is supported, O one of mighty arms, Arjuna. Know this to be the womb of all beings. I am the origin of the perceivable universe, as also the terminus as well. No one is higher than me, conqueror of wealth, Arjuna. Nothing greater. All this is bound by me as a necklace of gems by a string. I am the taste of water, O son of who takes away the deficiency of others, Arjuna. The luster of the moon and the sun. I am the sound of Om in the Vedas. I am the perfect nature of man. I am the smell of the earth and the light of the fire. I am the life of all existence and the purifying austerities of the performers of austerities. I am the seed of all beings. Know me, son of she who excels, Arjuna, as eternal. I am the intelligence of the intelligent, the light of all illumination. I am the strength of the strong, without desire or passion. I am the desires in beings which do not conflict with the ideal, O Lord of the descendants of the light of wisdom, Arjuna. And all beings which have an attitude of Sattva-Raja or Tamas know that they came from me. But I am not in them, they are in me. So long as they exhibit one quality more than the others, the equilibrium of divinity is not in them. They are in God. That is, here Krishna is saying, I am the perfection of the equilibrium. I am nirguna. As long as you have sattva, raja, or tama in predominance, then you're not nirguna. You see, actually, there's never a time when in manifesting our existence, when we're manifest, there's never a time when we're without quality. All three qualities exist all the time. But depending on our mode of perception and what we're looking for, one quality predominates the other two. And we say at that time that individual is in sattva, or that individual is in rajas, or that individual is in tamas. Now, Krishna is saying here, when all the qualities are in perfect balance and none is predominant, then I will be in them. They will recognize that it is me. They become nirguna because no gun is predominant. No gun is demonstrative. It doesn't stand out above the others. Then we would say that God is within them in nirvikalpa. So they are in God because all of this is God. But he's not in them in their perception at that time. They don't perceive it as being God until they are without guna, without quality, without attitude. This entire perceivable universe is diluted by the attitudes of these three qualities, and they don't know me who am beyond without change. It is really difficult to move beyond this illusion manifest by these divine qualities. Only those who take refuge in me can move beyond the illusion. So long as any one guna, as long as any one attitude or attribute is predominant, we're not taking refuge in Krishna. The ego is active. So only those who take refuge in me can move beyond the illusion. Those fools who perform evil and do not take refuge in me are the lowest of men. Illusion deprives them of wisdom, and they take refuge in the attitudes of duality. Clarity of pure devotion. Four kinds of people worship me who perform good actions. One who is in distress, one who desires knowledge, one who desires wealth, and one who is wise. O seer among the descendants of the light of wisdom, Arjuna. Of them, the wise, who are eternally united with devotion in oneness, are most excellent. For I am especially beloved to the wise as he is beloved to me. And the reason for that is quite obvious. The man of distress, when he loves God, he says, please remove my distress. And oftentimes, as is most often the case, when he gets his distress removed, he doesn't become wise. Similarly, with the one who desires knowledge or wealth, when they get the object of their desire fulfilled, then they forget about the source of the fulfillment. And they get caught up again in the proprietorship, in the illusion. So only the wise, they become eternally united with devotion in oneness. And they are most excellent. For I am especially beloved to the wise as he is beloved to me. All of these are surely noble, but the wise who has his soul fixed in thoughts of me, for he has united his soul in me as the supreme refuge. At the end of many births, the man of wisdom enters me. God is all of this. Such a great soul is hard to find and hard to become. Those whose wisdom has been clouded by various desires enter other divinities. Having followed various disciplines, they are led by their own nature. Whatever a devotee desires to offer with faith to whichever form he chooses, to him I grant immovable faith. Tonight we worshiped a car. Anybody who wants to offer anything in that way, I receive their devotion and I give them greater faith. United with that faith, he engages in the satisfaction of that form. And from that form, he attains fulfillment of the desire which surely has been proclaimed by me. But finite are the fruits of those with small intelligence. Those who sacrifice to the gods go to the gods. My devotees also come to me. So if you're looking to the gods for fulfillment of lower desires, you'll go to the gods and perhaps even get your desires fulfilled. But those who desire the supreme divinity, they also come to me. The unknowing think of me as having come into manifestation from the unmanifest. They do not know my supreme attitude as immutable and most excellent. It's not that I came into manifestation from the unmanifest. It's just that you can see me now. doesn't mean that I just took birth. I alone am the illuminator of this all, of the measurement of consciousness and union and all its modifications. Deluded by all this, people do not know me, the unborn and unchanging. I know the past and the present clarity of pure devotion, the future and all beings born, but no one knows me. From the ignorance which arises from attraction and repulsion, O descendant of the light of wisdom, Arjuna, all beings born are controlled by ignorance from this birth, O supreme light, Arjuna. Men whose sins have ended through meritorious actions are liberated from the ignorance of opposites. They constantly sing to me with intense vows. Those who make efforts to take refuge in me are liberated in old age and death. They know that whole supreme divinity and the entirety of spiritual knowledge. Those who know me as the primary existence, as the highest divinity, and as the ultimate sacrifice, even at the time of leaving, they know me united with consciousness. Om. Do we have questions?
29 seems to be saying that even old folks can get enlightenment. Or a death. Is death a special time?
Death is a very special time. If we can remember God at the time of death, then it's all accomplished.
Even if one hasn't had a glimpse even prior to that.
Right. It's very possible to have the glimpse or the darshan at the moment you leave the body. However, unless you want to count on a lot of good luck, it would be appropriate to prepare for leaving the body so that we have God in our thoughts all the time. But yes, at the time of leaving, we can have a vision. And if we have the vision at the time of leaving, then we become one with that vision. Are there other questions? No. Srima's wish was fulfilled.
My wish fulfilled.
The five elements.
Yes.
Are there just five elements, or are there gross and subtle elements? Are there just, ether is obviously very subtle.
Extremely subtle.
So,
well, you see, they are listed in their ascending order of grossness. Mm-hmm. So the earth being most gross, and the water being tangible but pliable, and the fire being perceivable, but you don't want to put your finger in it. The air is even more subtle. And, of course, the ether is most subtle.
So the physical world, as well as any subtle worlds, ether, bodies, or worlds, are all constituted of the five elements.
Yes. If you can think it, it has elements.
And now the other thing that's necessary is the three gunas, they're all affecting the elements. But what about the vital breath, the life force?
Yes.
Life force is something other than the elements.
Yes, but he says that he is. He says he's the life of all that is. This is my lower nature in verse 5. Mm-hmm. But different from it, know my higher existence of life, by which the perceivable universe is supported. Jiva Bhutang. The higher existence, the existence of life. He is the life of the jiva. Of every being in existence. So he's going on. in the recitation of his nature, he's saying, these are some of the places where you can find me. But don't think that I'm just limited. That would be a mistake. That would be an illusion. You would suffer from delusion by putting me in too great a constrictive limitation. So he's giving some examples of where he is. And in chapter 10, he'll give more. In chapter 11, Arjuna will describe what he sees. In chapter 12, we'll talk about what's true devotion. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Are there other questions in chapter 7? It was a pretty straightforward chapter.
This book has enlightened me and shown me all my selfish desires. Made me want to surrender my selfish desire more and more.
Uh-huh. Huh. It just gave me more excuses to justify mine. Let's go on ahead. Om Sam Saraswati Namaha.